Ellen frowned. That sounds like you calculatedly made him a god, Demure. That you believe in him as a symbol only. Demure shook his head. I'm seeing that Kelsier was a man, but a man who gained something. A mantle, a portion of something eternal and immortal. When he died, he wasn't just Kelsier, the crew leader. Don't you think it odd that he was never Mistborn before he went to the pits? That's the way allomancy works, Demure, Ellen said. You don't gain your powers until you snap, until you face something traumatic, something that nearly kills you. And you don't think that Kelsier experienced those kinds of events before the pits? Demure asked. My lord, he was a thief who robbed from obligators and noblemen. He lived a very dangerous life. You think he could have avoided beatings, near deaths, and emotional anguish? Ellen paused. He gained his powers at the pits, Demure said quietly, because something else came upon him. People who knew him speak of how he was a changed man when he came back. He had purpose. He was driven to accomplish something the rest of the world thought impossible. Demure shook his head. No, my lord. Kelsier, the man, died in those pits, and Kelsier, the survivor, was born. He was granted great power and great wisdom by a force that is above us all. That is why he accomplished what he did. That is why we worship him. He still had the follies of a man, but he had the hopes of a divinity. Ellen turned away. The rational, scholarly side of him understood exactly what was happening. Kelsier was gradually being deified, his life made more and more mystical by those who followed him. Kelsier had to be invested with heavenly power, for the church couldn't continue to revere a mere man. And yet another part of Ellen was glad for the rationalization, if only because it made the story that much more believable. After all, Demure was right. How did a man, living on the streets, last so long before snapping? Someone screamed. Ellen looked up, scanning the ranks. Men began to shuffle as the mists appeared, sprouting in the air like growing plants. He couldn't see the soldier who had fallen. Soon the point was moot, for others began to scream. The sun began to be obscured, blazing red as it approached the horizon. Ellen's horse shuffled nervously. The captains ordered the men to remain steady, but Ellen could still see motion. In the group before him, pockets appeared in the ranks as men randomly collapsed to the ground, like marionettes whose strings had been cut. They shook on the ground, other soldiers backing away in horror, mist moving all around them. They need me, Ellen thought, grabbing his reins, pulling on the emotions of those around him. Demure, let's ride. He turned his horse. Demure did not follow. Ellen spun. Demure, what? He choked off immediately. Demure sat in the mists, shaking horribly. Even as Ellen watched, the balding soldier slipped from his saddle, collapsing to the ankle-deep ash below. Demure, Ellen yelled, hopping down, feeling like a fool. He'd never thought to wonder if Demure was susceptible. He'd just assumed that he, like Vin and the others, was already immune. Ellen knelt beside Demure, his legs in the ash, listening to soldiers scream and captains yell for order. His friend shook and twisted, gasping in pain. And the ash continued to fall.
Rashik didn't solve all the world's problems. In fact, with each thing he did fix, he created new issues. However, he was clever enough that each subsequent problem was smaller than the ones before it. So instead of plants that died from the distorted sun and ashy ground, we got plants that didn't provide quite enough nutrition. he did save the world. True, the near destruction was his fault in the first place, but he did an admirable job, all things considered. At least he didn't release ruin to the world, as we did. 18. Sazed slapped his horse on the rump, sending it galloping away. The beast's hooves kicked up chunks of packed ash as it ran. Its coat had once been a keen white. Now it was a rough gray. Its ribs were beginning to show. It was malnourished to the point that it was no longer reasonable to expect it to carry a rider, and they could no longer afford to spare food for it.
"Now that's a sad sight,"
Breeze noted, standing beside Sazed on the ash-covered road. Their guard of 200 soldiers waited quietly, watching the beast run. Sazed couldn't help feeling that the release of their final horse was a symbol.
"You think it will be able to survive?" Breeze asked.
"I suspect that it will still be able to poke beneath the ash and find nourishment for a time," Sazed said. "It will be difficult, however."
Breeze grunted.
"Living's difficult for all of us these days. Well, I wish the creature the best of luck. Are you going to join Ariane and me in the carriage?"
Sazed glanced over his shoulder toward the vehicle, which had been lightened, then rigged to be pulled by soldiers. They had removed the doors and hung curtains instead, and had removed sections of the back as well. With the decreased weight and 200 men to take turns, the vehicle wouldn't be too much of a burden. Still, Sazed knew, he would feel guilty being pulled by others. His old servant's instincts were too strong.
"No," Sazed said. "I shall walk for a bit. Thank you."
Breeze nodded, walking to the carriage to sit with Ariane, a soldier holding a parasol over his head until he was inside. Now exposed to the ash, Sazed put up the hood of his travel robe, hefted his portfolio in his arm, then strode across the black ground to the front of the line.
"Captain Goradel," he said, "you may continue your march."
They did so. It was a rough hike. The ash was growing thick, and it was slick and tiring to walk on. It moved and shifted beneath the feet, almost as difficult as walking on sand. As hard as the hike was, however, it wasn't enough to distract Sazed from his troubled feelings. He had hoped that visiting the army, meeting with Elland and Vin,